All right. Thank you, Monica. It is Tuesday, October 29th, 2024. I am bundled up. As I was, it's chilly down in our basement today, and the Bob Dylan line, "The wintertime is coming, windows are filled with frost," it came to mind. And of course, then I had to sing the rest of the song, which is, takes a lot to laugh, takes a train to cry. But anyway, we won't go through the entire verse. But yes, so and perhaps my post, I am in a post-surgery state. Maybe that's making my blood. I did just ice my knee, so chill, just running at a lower temperature. Welcome, everybody. So nice to see so many friends. And I think I see some names that I'm not familiar with, and I'm not going to say that you're not my friends. It's fine, but there are some people here that I've known for a long time and have been showing up. And it's been just I have to spend a little time reflecting before we meditate. Just that, I had surgery last Thursday, and today is Tuesday, so. So I'm recovering really well, starting to do rehab exercises and moving around, well, just using a cane now. I got off crutches pretty quickly, and working with pain is so interesting. You know, when you've been a longtime meditator, and especially if you've been on meditation retreats where you sat with your legs crossed and you sat for long periods of time breathing with the difficult sensations in your knees. It turns out to actually be really helpful. And I've been taking this Anapanasati course, and that's, the mindfulness of breathing sutta. And something that I've studied fairly extensively. And it's interesting that, in the traditional straightforward way of like practicing mindful breathing, it's just about having this concentration object that then opens up the mind into insights, and the heart, mind, whatever, into insight. But some of the experts, Bhikkhu Bodhi and Buddhadasa Bhikkhu, and I would say Thich Nhat Hanh as well, take it beyond that and talk about the use of mindful breathing throughout our lives, and for working with emotions, sensations, mental states. And that's, I in these whatever 5 days, I haven't been, lying down, getting into concentrated states. That's just not possible in this, for me, at least in this physical condition. But the awareness of the breath is so key. And then being able to breathe, and when sensations get strong and unpleasant, being able to breathe and relax and take the attention into the sensations and ease through them. It's just such a gift. It's just a huge gift. And so I really encourage you, all of us, to think of mindful breathing as a life practice, something that we really try to remember to do. And I've become actually where I breathe loudly when I'm walking around, and where I'm kind of, letting out loud breaths and things, and kind of just like to stay in my body and to soften and work with that. Anyway, as I say, it's been manageable. I haven't had intense pain at all, really not at any point. So I'm very fortunate for that. Of course, they give you a nerve blocker for the first year. The first like 24, 36 hours, anyway, I'm very grateful for the care I've gotten, and really received a lot of emails and texts from folks, many of whom are, or some of whom at least, are on this call, wishing me well. So Appreciate it. So enough of a prelude. Let's sit. And even though I might not be a great meditator at this time, I'm still a great meditation teacher. So I will guide you, even if I'm not capable of getting to the states that I am guiding you toward right now. So finding a place of comfort and groundedness in your posture, sitting upright as best you can, really just really having the body in whatever is a workable posture. Obviously, I've been doing a lot of lying down, breathing. And you can close your eyes or just lower your gaze. And first, just tuning into your general state right now, whether it's body or emotions or thoughts or the whole catastrophe, as they say, just what's going on right now. And then being aware of your breath in that world of sensation and feeling in the mind. It can be helpful to take some deeper breaths if that feels comfortable and natural. And letting that intentional breathing also carry a kind of healing intention so that the in-breath is a opening, uplifting, creating space. The out-breath is a release, softening, letting go. And then to move a little bit more into a settled space, to take some time to draw in closer to the breath. Not just feeling it as a movement of in and out, but following the whole of the breath, all the sensations of breath. Can focus at a particular point, like the nostrils or the belly, or you can follow the whole of the breath through the whole body. Each breath taking you deeper. Each breath bringing more clarity to the mind. Each breath softening the body, softening the mind. And as the body settles, we become more aware of the subtle energies, the feelings, mood, mind states beneath the surface, underlying energies and feelings. We breathe with them, giving them space, an attitude of non-resistance and investigation, or just looking closely, being with. And as we attune to breath and body, to feelings, mind states, at times the habitual thoughts, tendencies to get lost, take over. And we find ourselves disconnected. And these core experiences. This is quite natural and not something to judge or to fight with. Just to notice and return. Turn to the breath, to the body, to the feeling. Thoughts are not the enemy of meditation, just natural upwelling from the mind. If we can, we try to see thoughts as just another sense object, like the breath or the body or feelings, a sound, sensation. In this way, we don't give them a special attention or special place in the experience. Simply view them as any other ordinary sense experience. If thoughts or feelings become distressing or unpleasant, difficult, we try to arouse an attitude, a response of kindness, to hold ourselves, to hold our feelings, our thoughts, with a sense of openness, compassion, care. It is difficult to be a human being. To sit with our humanness in this way can bring up some of those difficulties. So we breathe with kindness. We smile at our own heart. We forgive and accept the unhelpful thoughts and feelings that arise, and just try to be here with this simple, pure experience of life, of breath, not making a story, not building a world. Just presence. Just being. radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies, downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will. Righty-dighty. I was just, I think that was kind of pleasant, though. I will say that was kind of nice to sit. It's the most actual. I did some practice yesterday, but it's been difficult. Oh, it hasn't been difficult. I haven't been really trying to do formal meditation practice. But I will say, after talking a little bit about mindful breathing and the value of that, the insight into impermanence, the remembrance of impermanence is also like super helpful. I'm not going to talk about my surgery for the rest of the day, but just that thing of being able to watch, realize, oh, like I just, bent my knee, or I just was like climbing the steps or something, and now it hurts, and breathing and feeling it, and then noticing when it goes away. And because it's just so easy to get into this mind state of, oh God, I hate this, or I need to fix this, and not see that, like, oh, it's just, that was just for like a couple minutes. So anyway, the Dharma is precious, and there's some suttas where the Buddha recommends mindfulness and mindful breathing as a healing practice. Think it's maybe underappreciated, but who am I to say? So I've been reading through Bhikkhu Anālayo's great book on mindfulness of breathing on the Anapanasati Sutta in a course, studying it, which is very, very odd for me. I haven't studied with I haven't been a student, a Dharma student, other than being on retreats, in a long time, and there's complications in that. But anyway, and I've been through this book extensively before, but you know how Dharma books are. They're the gift that keeps on giving, right? Because what they when you read them, what you're seeing is your own development, your own mind, your own insight. And so that when you read them at one time, you get out of it what you're capable of getting. And then when you wait for a time and re read them again, you've evolved, and maybe you're just in a different space or different state, but you get different things out of them. That's why people read the big book or the Bible or, the Quran over and over, right? Because they are so rich and reflective of ourselves, and because we also approach them as with these questions of what is there in this for me? What is there that I can learn right now? So the I know that for those who aren't familiar with the Anapanasati Sutta, it's not terribly complicated, but it's complicated enough that I can't explain it all without spending the whole morning on it. But I'll just say that there's four main parts that follow that correspond to the four foundations of mindfulness. And so it's body, feelings, mind, and then what I call insights. So the third one is mind, and this is, I want to read this little piece from Anallio, where he's talking about these different ways of describing or naming mind, which after I read it and thought about it, I thought, like, this isn't really like a religion, like, and obviously there's always conversations about this: is Buddhism a religion? And in some ways it is, of course, and it's practiced as a religion, and particularly in Buddhist cultures. But I was like, are there any other religions that address these questions of consciousness? And I suppose Taoism, or and maybe to some degree Hinduism. But anyway, I'm not enough of a religious scholar to say. But in any case, I'm just going to read a little bit of this. And if you happen to have the book Mindfulness of Breathing by Bhikkhu Anallio, this is on page 76 under the subheading The Mind. In the instructions translated above, which say, experiencing the mind, I shall breathe in, experiencing the mind, I shall breathe out. Mind renders the Pali term citta. This is a term that a lot of Buddhists are familiar with, citta, citta. It's talked a lot about in the northern tradition in the Mahayana. Bodhicitta, you may have heard that phrase, and sort of an enlightened mind or awakened mind. So the word in the sutta, experiencing citta, I shall breathe in, experiencing citta, I shall breathe out. In the early discourses, citta stands predominantly for our subjective mental state. Okay. A subjective mental state, the way I understand that is that this is how I'm experiencing or understanding my mental state. It might not be the actual mental state that I'm in, but it's the one that I think I'm in, because it's subjective, right? It's not objectively this mental state, but it's this is the state I seem to be in. The significance of citta is aptly conveyed by its translation into Chinese, which involves a character that represents the heart. Sort of a very famous thing. People often are like, heart mind, or when you say talk about the mind in Asia, you point to your heart. As evident from the listings of different types of cittas in the Satipatthana Sutta, which is the four foundations of mindfulness, such mental states could be with or without a defilement, like anger, or else concentrated or not concentrated, for example. And this is something characteristically different between the four foundations of mindfulness and the Mindfulness of Breathing Sutta. Even though there's many parallels, there are these differences. And one distinct one is that the four foundations of mindfulness address what I would just call positive and negative states, whereas the Mindfulness of Breathing Sutta only addresses positive states. So, all right. So, experiencing citta, I shall breathe in. And, well, I'm just going to go on, because I'm not so much trying to talk about citta, but that the reason I thought this was interesting is that he talks about three different Pali terms that refer to mind. And so this is what's interesting to me about this, is that there is this whole study of consciousness, right, in the West, like, and the question of what is your mind is like an inch, is like one that people ask, some people. Another Pali term for the mind is manas, which MANAS, which stands more for the intellective dimension of subjective experience. Okay, intellective dimension of subjective experience. I guess that means your thoughts. I'm not exactly sure. But he says it has more meaning. As the sixth sense, manas stands on a par with the five physical senses, eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and body, as an avenue of experience. So you may have heard this in Buddhist teachings, that Buddhists talk about six senses, and that the mind is a sense. So this is the Pali term for mind as a sense, manas. So the Pali term for mind as a sense is not citta, the ordinary term that we. So it's a just a particular. So what we're getting here is seeing that there are different dimensions of our mind, right? And this is helpful because if you're applying mindfulness to your mind, it can be useful to realize, oh, like, right now, what I'm experiencing is this. I mean, it's subtle for sure, and you're not going to like pick it up at every moment of your life, but maybe at times you're meditating, or at times when you're in a reflective state, you'll sort of notice that you're experiencing things, or you're aware of things in this particular way. He goes on about manas. Alternatively, manas serves as the third door of action, where it comes together with bodily and verbal forms of activity. So this is something that I often talk about, which is the three forms of karma. So karma is created, that is, karma means action, and actions have results. And so the three forms of action, according to Buddhism, are thoughts, words, and deeds. Now, most of us think of deeds as the way we create karma, the things we do. But according to Buddhism, our thoughts also create karma. And it's this aspect of the mind, the manas part of the mind, that creates, that we're talking about when we're talking about thoughts in that context. So that sort of justifies as well saying that manas is referring to sort of the thinking mind, because the intellective dimension of subjective experience. Sorry if this is too, dry and philosophical. I want, it is, and yet, if you take it, I think you can see that it's got potential for opening some things up in your practice. So here we have citta, heart mind, the subjective mental state. All right, which could be, loving or angry, could be concentrated or unconcentrated, all kinds of different mental states. And then we have manas, which is the intellective dimension. So the mental states are different from thoughts, which is like a key idea, right? And so we see that mental states are really up next to emotions. They're close to emotions. Some of them are actually emotions. All right, so there's a third kind of definition for mind, or here it's more consciousness. Yet another relevant Pali term is vijnana, VINNANA, usually translated as consciousness. In its general usage, vijnana stands for the quality of knowing that takes in information through any of the six sense doors, including manas. So the quality of knowing, well, you can see that that's different from the subjective mental state, or from the intellective dimension, the thought world. Now it's something we could call it more pure, or more less formed. more formless, the knowing. And this is very subtle, and it's not something that you can just like necessarily pick up on in the way that you can go like, well, my mental state right now is, you know, happy or something, you know, or I'm thinking about, you know, work. So the quality of knowing. But this is the quality, this is the aspect of mind that the Thai forest tradition monks really point to as a meditative object that you're actually, that's actually recommended. That is, and it's because it is bringing us close to that dimension of the unconditioned, which is nibbana or nirvana. So when you can sit and quiet things down, obviously it does not happen all the time, but when that's available to you, typically on a retreat that you'd be able to touch on this, but it, certainly in daily life, daily practice, we could get to these states at times. You know, things quiet down, the mind gets quiet, there aren't a lot of strong emotions right now, and you're just sort of sitting in that space and it's getting quiet, that this suggestion that you turn toward the aspect of the mind that is actually aware, so that, because most of the time we are paying attention to the object of awareness, and we aren't aware of the awareness itself. It's always this sort of outward pointing, right, that we do with the mind, looking for, paying attention to. It's a very subtle shift, and it really takes some time and sort of settling and exploration. You sort of have to like look around, like, where is it, what? And then you have to kind of let go of even that and allow it to emerge. But that can be a really valuable thing to explore. Okay, this is vijnana. So a little bit more about vijnana. In addition, vijnana also has a central role in relation to continuity during life and from one life to another. So it has to do with rebirth. So it is this consciousness. So that, you know, supposedly is like carrying, moving us, that's, I'm not even going to go into it. Like, that's like, you know, moving from one life to the next. I don't know. I don't really get into that aspect of Buddhism because I just find it to be a bit of a rabbit hole. A little bit more, that since I'm talking about this in the context of the sutta, I'll read a little bit more of Analio. Although the instructions in the Anapanasati Sutta employ only the term citta, there's another sutta that brings in a series of different terms for the mind, including manas and vijnana. In the case of vijnana, these other suttas mention not only consciousness as such, but the aggregate of consciousness and the element of consciousness. From this viewpoint, experiencing the mind as the first step in the present tetrad concerns a discernment of mind in its different modalities, including consciousness. So, this is, I'm kind of like throwing you in the middle of a Anapanasati course in a way, but I think it's something that we can nonetheless explore from in an isolated way, to not have to We go through the whole sutta necessarily. So the idea being that, as you work through this process of mindfulness of body, breath, mindfulness of feelings, which is, how I often guide meditation as well. And at each stage, there's a calming that then we become more capable of being aware of citta as well as manas and vijnana. And at that point, the traditional, the ordinary way of understanding this is, okay, now I'm going to be aware of my subjective mental state. All right, I'm going to be mindful of that. But as Analia is implying, and I've had this specific conversation with Ajahn Pasano, it could also, and quite logically also include not just what's my subjective mental state, but can I just be with mind, with what I'd call space, the space of mind. So when we talk about awareness of awareness, or awareness of the knowing quality, I actually think of that as just the space. And one of the things that that does that I think is so valuable, and the way I talk about this in my unpublished book on this topic, is that when you get to awareness of mind, you can be aware that everything you've been paying attention to before, breath, body, feelings, as well as thoughts, are all occurring in this space of mind. Now, this is a critical insight, and I'll explain why. But let me just describe this a little bit more. So you're sitting, and you're, as we do, we have an object, breath, and, and maybe, you get settled, and the body is very calm, and then you're tuning in to the subtle feeling states, and then that's calming, and you're not generating a lot of thinking. And then, so then you kind of are like stepping back and sort of saying, oh, can I be aware that this is happening in the mind, in mind? And so I've got now, I'm still in this, object, subject, object state. That is, mind is observing feelings, sensations, etc. But I'm aware that that's what's happening. So that means that I'm starting to attune to the fact of the knowing itself. And so I'm seeing my mind, mental state, fine. I'm seeing like what, that I'm concentrated, or that I'm, happy, or, and generally at this state, you feel pretty good. So it's pleasant, and it's pretty pleasant. But that's not what's my primary interest. My primary interest is like to maybe become more aware of the knowing itself and turn toward that. But what the insight, there's this critical insight that comes from that, right? Which is, this is just stuff happening in mind rather than I am having a feeling, I am having a thought, I am having a sensation. It's just, you start to see it as just a process that's unfolding, because you're breaking apart the structure of self, which is this container of body, feelings, perceptions, volitional formations, and consciousness. This is the five khandhas. We live in this container of these five called aggregates that we operate within. And the implication for us, our unacknowledged but assumed implication of our experience of this, is that this is I, this is me. What I'm experiencing is me. And I'm having my experience, I'm having my thoughts, my sensations, my knee. And but when the mind gets quiet enough to observe the process as it unfolds and see that those sensations are just, that those feelings are just coming up, going. The thoughts are just appearing like memories, projections, and we start to see that it's not all tied together in a thing. There isn't this object that's moving around through space or through time. It is just stuff, mind-body experience unfolding moment by moment. And so this is the insight into emptiness. This is the insight into not self that Buddhists love to talk about, right? And people get so confused about. But it's not something to figure out. It's something to see. And it's not something that you get like, oh, great, there's no self. I'm not connected. I'm not holding on to that anymore. Great, I'm not going to do that anymore. No. You're going to continue to live within this, illusion, this functional illusion. It's a term for you, functional illusion. You're going to continue to live in it because you need it because to function. It's a very useful illusion. However, when you realize that it's an illusion, then it doesn't control you in the same way. So that when your knee hurts, you can go, oh, that's a sensation. It's impermanent. Let me breathe. There it goes. I'm okay. No, it's not my knee and it's in pain and I can't stand it. It's just, oh, this is unpleasant. This is difficult. I'll be okay. There's this okayness. That's why the compassion and care has to be the partner for this. This isn't, I made some notes about this, and there's like one little reference Anali has in here, but really, really critical that through this whole process that we're not just like grinding, like I am a Buddhist and I'm gonna take apart the five aggregates and I'm gonna have insight into emptiness. There always has to be, it has to be supported by, carried by love. Really, without that, it's torture in a way. It's a kind of a perverse way of living. But if we bring love to it and compassion and kindness to it, then there's this real freedom and joy that comes through it and release. And we see like, oh, this is what the Buddha was talking about. There is this potential and it's not out there. It's not, I have to go to Asia and sit in a cave for 10 years to get enlightened. It's really right here. It's more available than we think of it. Because we tend to exoticize things like enlightenment, things like spiritual awakening, we turn them into these magical things and we don't see them in their ordinary context that they exist for us in our daily lives. And this is, here we are at recovery, right? We've arrived back at recovery because that's what recovery is. Recovery is this spiritual awakening that happens in the most ordinary of ways. It happens through starting by addressing addiction, right? By which is means that it's addressing craving. And then it develops through connecting with people, through connecting with care, through support. An investigation, and then letting go and all and inventory, oh, inventory, mindfulness, investigation, these are all partners, right? The truthfulness, the honesty, the truthfulness of recovery, of being true about our addictive behaviors and our failings, then connects right directly over to the truthfulness of my human experience, and to see the truth of that. It's just different stages of that process. Not one is not better or more important than the other. They all, interact and and support each other in this process. Well, it's been, you know, there you go. I guess having my knee replaced caused another level of spiritual awakening. So what can I say? Very nice to sit with you guys and share. So we have a few minutes left if anybody wants to respond or say anything.
Hi, Kevin. This is Charmaine.
Okay, Charmaine.
You see me?
Let me just flip my view. Now I see you. Yes.
Okay. I just want to thank you for spreading the word so beautifully for me. It all, you know, for the moment becomes clear, and I'm part of it, and it's really important. And I thank you for that. The other thing is, I went to a surgery when you did. However, I had a surgery, esophageal hiatus hernia. So it was not only dealing with my with a hernia, it was dealing with my breath. And it was quite, you know, it became so very precious because with the esophagus, you know, I at the first 3 days were the worst. I'm, you know, what is this, the fifth day? And so I'm much better, but there was sort of a panic. I couldn't, you know, swallow. And I'm only sharing this because it all has to do with what you're talking about with that breath. That breath, that preciousness, and I was able to, I guess when you're, you know, in this pivotal place, you are able to step back and take a look at it all. And one of the things I wanted to share, which I think is sort of funny, they gave me, I don't know if you can see it.
Oh yeah,
they gave me at
I
the
have one of
hospital.
those.
Okay.
I've been
But
working
I
with that.
Thought, isn't this interesting to help me breathe?
I know.
To help me breathe. And it's because with my surgery, apparently they put a lot of air in there when they do it. And so I get gas. And they're telling me that the breathing helps the gas. And it does. The breathing helps everything. But
Yes.
I thought, isn't that interesting? They have a toy, a Dharma toy.
Beautiful.
But
Thanks,
thank you.
Charmaine.
I so appreciate you.
I'm glad you're doing okay. It sounds like a tough one, you know, just these bodies are not very reliable. John, I saw your hand up before.
Yeah, thanks, Kevin. I have to say, your description toward the end, it just blew my mind when you were talking about how all of the things that we perceive are just things, you know, they're just these things. I've been sitting here, you know, listening to you. I've just been sitting here, and the number of thoughts and, you know, random material running around, it's not in the room. It's not outside. It's, you know, it's in the, I just never pictured it the way you had. And it just blew my mind. I had to just tell you that. So
thanks,
appreciate
John.
it. Thanks.
Well, I'll tell you, I blew my own mind, frankly. No, I mean, you know, the Dharma is so beautiful. And sometimes, you know, talking about it, it feels like I connect with something. And it's weird because, you know, I wasn't, I was just trying to get through today. But anyway, thank you. Stuart, hi.
Hi, Kevin. Thanks for being here. And I wish you a speedy recovery.
Thank you.
You touched on this subject last week, and I just want to let you know that I'm probably just scratching the surface surface, but I've noticed already in my meditation that it's okay to have thoughts. I mean, instead of trying to suppress my thoughts or clear my head, it's made it easier. And I just kind of picture myself being above the thoughts, watching them go by and not, staying with them. So, and then in the last, particularly in the last 5 minutes today of your lecture, I think it really brought it all together. So I've noticed improvement already in my meditation. So thank you.
That's great. Thank you, Stuart. And it is, it's really like we're trying to get this sort of like angle on the whole thing. And it takes a little while. Meditation instructions usually start with a concentration practice and trying to get people to kind of quiet down and let go of your thoughts. And but that's often just misunderstood, right? It just gets like, oh, I'm supposed to stop thinking. And then that's really only an introductory practice, is to just focus on the breath and to let go of all your thoughts, but learning to just allow the thoughts to come and go and be in the space of mind and the different ways of orienting to them, that's actually meditating. I'm glad that was helpful. Mary Helen.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi.
I really appreciated this morning you're bringing in the experience of pain. I've been having some problems with sciatica, and I don't know how I'm going to deal with it eventually, but just on a day-to-day basis, I notice that there are times when I'm really focused on it and almost as an object of my consciousness, and it doesn't it's not helpful. So I appreciate just your talking about pain as something that we experience, and the way we deal with it makes a lot of difference.
Well, my wife was at was noticing that I was saying talking about sensations or unpleasant sensations, and she was like, "Don't you mean pain?" And first of all, I said, when I call it pain, that tends to reify it and make it more problematic. But I also said, like, really, they have the 1 through 10 thing with pain, and what I said is, for me, if it's really under 5, if I'm, 3 to 4, I don't think of it as pain. I just think of it as an unpleasant sensation. And but when it gets over 5 and starts to move into a really intense sensation, then it certainly is pain and has to be addressed. I mean, I had the I wasn't like, oh, I'm not going to take the Percocet because I'm an addict. I'm not. That's not the, this is what the Percocet is for, and I wasn't hesitant to take it. I don't like the effects of it, and so I don't like, which is fortunate, because I know a lot of people love the effects. But I didn't stop taking it because I'm like heroic, but because the pain level was low enough that I didn't need it. And if it had been high, I would have kept taking it. I haven't thrown them away. I'm not drawn to them, but if something happened, if I slipped and twisted my knee or something, it could shoot up. And it's again, it's like having a relationship to it rather than feeling like the pain is me, and I have to do something about it. So very often, all I have to do is stop moving, rest, put the ice machine on, I don't have to fix it. And it does take patience. I mean, no doubt, because there are times like, oh, this kind of sucks. I'm going to have to wait this out. But yeah. So I appreciate that, and just generally, Monica always watching over this, that you put in the information about the coming retreat. So that is, we're actually past the save the date stage. We are actually registering people. So it's February 22nd, 5th. No, it must be 27th. To this March 2nd. I'll have to double check. But anyway, it's 5 days. So that, because that would be, oh no, that's right. February only is 28 days. Duh, duh, duh. See, my brain is still not funky. Sorry, I shouldn't be beating myself on the top of the head. Anyway, not a good example of self-compassion. So that retreat is on. It's going to be great. And who's here with us today is going to be on the teaching team with Greg, and look, really looking forward to that. That is the next sort of major teaching event that I'll be doing. And as I said, my book Sought Through Meditation is out in paperback on Amazon, and then it's going to be out as an audiobook. I'm hoping maybe by the end of the week. So I'm going to send out an email. Yes, Mickey, thank you for your motivation. It was fun recording it, and relatively easy. I mean, it was work, but and yeah, famously, I don't like work, but anyway, so I'll let you know. I'll probably send an email to the list of people that come to this group, as well as regular mailing list. Other than that, I will be back here next Tuesday. I don't have any other teaching scheduled. I might do a Zoom for the Mountain Stream group in mid-November. Looks like I think the 17th, something like that. And then in December, I'm doing a day long at Spirit Rock, my traditional end of year retreat there, and actually going to be on the land as well as hybrid. So that's all that's coming up, as far as I know. So thanks everybody for showing up and hanging out. Nobody's saying goodbye in the usual way.
Goodbye, Kevin. That was
Thank you.
great.
There we
All
go.
that from the breath. Amazing, isn't it?
I know, it is
It was
amazing.
really deep.
Heal quickly.
Thanks.
Heal quickly and painlessly.
Thank you, Mickey.
Glad you're
And
here.
blessings.
Thank you.
See you later.
All right. Thanks, Monica.
Bye. Good to see
All
everybody.
right. Yeah.
Here, heal well.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Take care.
Good talk, Kevin. If you ever need any inspiration, just hit your thumb really hard with a hammer and you'll be there.
Thank you for that guidance, Mike. I'm going to be down in San Diego in January.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
Where at?
The UU Church that the Insight San Diego does, I'm going to do a half day there, and then that's on a Saturday, and then the next day I'll be at the Dharma Bums Temple.
Oh, cool. Well, I'll look into catching up with you there.
I hope you'll be there. Yeah.
Yeah.
And where is the retreat, the February March retreat?
It's in it's down near Half Moon Bay, in the Redwoods, up in the Redwoods, up from there. Yeah.
Nice. I
Yeah.
will look into it.
It'd be great if you could come.
Bye.
You never know. All right. Bye, everybody.